And I'm assuming based on the Gulf from the models that I've seen, what you guys can clarify, where these large amount of associated gas is coming, it's expected to come down into South Texas, but there's not really enough demand on the power side to pick up that gas. So either you're betting on liquefaction capacity coming online, sending into Mexico. So frame that kind of band in terms of how much you're just moving basis around essentially in a circle, it seems like. Is that the
So
right way to think
when we look
about
at
it?
things from like even last year compared to like a 2025 perspective, as Adrian says, our group kind of looks a little bit further out, and we really see just incremental demand of for gas and power burn. It's really only about a B and a half, 1.5 BCF, give or take, for power, just in the Gulf Coast, right? And so that's not doesn't sound like a whole lot. You know, just it just sounds like it's just a little bit more than previous. And industrial growth would be another pretty big driver, but when we look at what the consultants are saying and the way they're looking at it, it's not much either. It's less than half a BCF. So we're looking at potentially 2 BCF per day incremental growth of gas demand, and just only in power and industrials. But what we've been talking about is, the biggest driver for gas demand in the Gulf Coast is just LNG. It truly is. And when you look at Texas versus Louisiana, Louisiana is the bigger sink out of the two, especially from the infrastructure. When you look at even if you count Golden Pass, if that were to come online, being the Beaumont area, we kind of count that with our Louisiana sink itself, and we see that incremental from 2017, you're looking at probably around 13 BCF of gas per day being burned or demand located there in the Gulf Coast out of Louisiana. And maybe about 3.5 out of the Texas side from a Corpus Christi or a Freeport. So, Louisiana, we feel like at least the big differentiator between the LNG projects in the United States versus some of the other international ones, we've got pretty amazing connectivity. And as Renee was talking about, optionality of path to get to the ultimate demand center, but along the Gulf Coast where we've got a lot of these facilities kind of popping up close to each other, you're going to be either fighting for gas or you've got to create more capacity to get the gas to your facility.
So I wanted to ask you, I know this is an issue I think a lot of people take for granted with some projects coming on time and on budget, that LNG projects are not delayed what the timeline they tell you, you can take that to the bank. How sensitive is the demand? Let's just say an LNG project, you've seen a couple delays, there's risk potentially that there's more delays. How sensitive is that to bottlenecking further or sending gas back into the grid from the work that you've done?
Yeah, so if you look at the Louisiana market, it really is sort of like the release valve for all of this prolific gas coming from all of the basins that we've talked about. And it's really absolutely required that these projects come online, not only from a supply push perspective, but from a demand pull perspective. We saw prices increase dramatically over 2018 relative to 2017, precisely because a lot of these projects were delayed in Louisiana. Looking forward to this year, I think that's going to change. We expect about 35 million tons of new capacity coming to the market in 2019 alone, two-thirds of which is coming from the Atlantic Basin. So it's going to be really interesting to see how all of these new projects percolating in Louisiana push that supply into the market, particularly when so much of the demand is emerging in Asia and only about 10 to 12 million tons of new capacity is coming online from supply capacity perspective in the Asian market.
So, I mean, if you do have, a delay or some type of unplanned outage, do you have a sense of how much that pushes gas back into the US grid? Like, how impactful is that? Where are you likely to see that pressure push into basis or supply building up more? If you could give us a sense for where you would potentially see those bottlenecks.
That's a great question for the US guys.
So I'll give you some interesting little stats just looking at the gas market today. You've got just some areas really close geographically that have huge price disconnects. So you've got, today I think Henry Hub's right around 450. If you look in just that region, some of the constrained areas that are less constrained because new pipelines will come into service, they're trading around $4.10. You go just a couple hundred miles away into the Algonquin area in northeast New England, and you're at almost $8.
Right.
You go to Western Canada right now, and you've got gas up at Station 2 in British Columbia at 40 cents.
Right.
Due to a pipeline constraint. What that's doing downstream is it's moved gas up to $8.
Right.
Similarly, in Southern California, you got gas at $10 today. So this is the stable North American gas price environment, notwithstanding that there can be constraints. And so when you go to Louisiana, again, we kind of talked about how you had oversupply coming, and it's already starting to rear its head in northern Louisiana, and even in Mississippi too. And part of the issue is all these pipeline reversals that have brought the prolific Northeast gas down to the coast have been hitting constraints because pipelines tend to get bigger from their traditional past, going from bigger diameters as they got further north.
Sure.
So coming south, now you can only cram so many pieces into a smaller hole. So you're seeing this constraint, and it's going to get worse over time. And then we've also looked at where all the LNG export facilities are planning to reach up to secure their gas, and you realize you're coming up to an issue of scarcity. When you get scarcity, you have price escalation, right? Which is
right.
What I'm kind of trying to describe. And I think Kirk's looked at in the past some of the magnitude of some of that. Maybe you can kind of highlight the degree of need that's going to be in this area.
Yeah, and I think Roger and yourself, and as well as Adrian, kind of touched on some of the pipelines, and especially, like I said, whether it's the reversal capacities from the Northeast and the Mid-Continent gas coming across traditionally from kind of the West down to the Southeast. So you're looking at all these pipes coming in, and it looks like a big spaghetti bowl, but when it comes down to it, you're looking at upward of around 9 to 10 BCF of capacity kind of reaching into that North Louisiana area, and then what is trying to get further south down to where the LNG plants will all be located. You're looking at it goes from about 9 BCF down to about 6 BCF and less as you get closer to the facilities. And so it's not free to build those pipes to alleviate some of that stress, and especially from what it does to the basis, as you were asking about before. When you look at the amount of demand, the potential demand that's going to be there along the Gulf Coast, somebody's going to be willing to pay the price to get from their pool or from their location to get down to the demand center.
Sure.
And like I said, I think part of what we're looking to do is to help match with customers, the opportunity to get to the facility to make it to international pricing.
So the other way to think about the issue too is that if we see delay, any delays in these loads from LNG is just going to exacerbate the problem.
Sure.
As you're suggesting. And the other thing to think about is, beyond the basis problem, what's the index going to do?
You're referring to Henry Hub?
What's Henry Hub going to do? So,
right.
Again, thinking about that time frame, 2017 to 2020, mm-hmm. we're seeing about 20 BCF of growth in supply. 7-ish of that is in this first wave of LNG that will be covered off,
mm-hmm.
and that leaves another 13 that's got to get managed somehow.
Right.
So that's the supply push that Renee was mentioning earlier. We got to get another 13 BCF of demand. Otherwise, we're going to see more flaring in the Permian, and we're going to see Henry Hub's price, continue to drop. So this 450 we're seeing this winter is really, in my mind, a short-term aberration of what we're going to see going forward.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the key message is still, Lower 48 in the U.S. is a phenomenal supplier of low-cost gas with a huge resource base, and it's improving. Everything we see in the upstream space just continues to emphasize that we're low cost. And the aberrations we see are about managing the supply to an LNG plant.
Right.
So that's what we have to do. That's and each plant has its challenges, and that's why we monitor basis and disruptions in constraints in the system so closely.
Okay, on that note, let's shift to the downstream. Renee and Adrian, you guys are recently in Portugal at a LNG conference. Do you want to talk a bit about the sentiment, what your key takeaways were from there, and then we can continue on?
Yeah, I think that there were a number of conferences this year.
Okay.
And I've noticed through the course of 2018 that the sentiment has improved, that there's more buoyancy, there's more excitement about the LNG market as we go through the year. And this last one in Portugal, CWC, was the same. People are quite excited about where the market is. They're quite excited about gas as not just a bridge fuel, but a destination fuel. For the globe, for the world, and that the prospects for the LNG business globally are quite exciting. A couple other points, this notion, and I'm sure Renee will get into it in some detail, is commoditization, right? The industry has been built on long-term bankable contracts with investment grade counterparties.
Right.
That is seen to be still required today, but diminishing over time as liquidity increases in the marketplace for LNG. And a third point, touching on what you just brought up in terms of the plants and the delays we're seeing. EPC contracts, having the right risk management around the construction is becoming critical in many people's minds, and that was discussed at some length.
Saying that that's been taken for granted over the last couple of years?
I think it has been taken for granted, and now people are realizing that this could be quite an issue. And it's going to be very important for the next wave of LNG facilities.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right, Adrian. It's been really fascinating to see the shift in mentality from conference to conference, even just 3 years ago.
Give us a sense for that. How's that pendulum moved?
Yeah, so it used to be, I mean, it depends from year to year, right?
Sure.
People think very short term, which is ironic given the fact that this is an industry where it takes at least 4 years to build an LNG facility.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very long lead time business.
Not only that, but the assets will last 40 plus years, right?
Right.
Or 60
right.
years. So.
Right, exactly. So it's an industry beset by short term thinking in a very long run context. But we've really seen an increased bullishness and sentiment this year in 2018 from all of the major conferences that we attended. And getting to this idea of commoditization, used to be thought that contracts were the major constraint in financing new facilities.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen aggregators and major large IOCs continuing to take a large role in underpinning new supply. And we've also seen a growing number of traders enter the market as they see new opportunities in evolving LNG market from as the market continues to, pardon the pun, liquefy. So, you know, we've really seen financial swaps from a JKM perspective increasing in liquidity as well. So it's not just a physical story, it's a financial story. In 2018, based on the current trajectory we've seen so far, there's about 27.5 million tons of LNG equivalent of JKM swaps that have been traded. And that's a pretty dramatic increase from year to year. If you look at it, it's about 160% CAGR over the past 5 to 6 years in JKM swap liquidity. So really, the industry is playing catch up to this idea of commoditization. And I think that the winners in this industry will be the ones that can produce the lowest cost LNG and have the most number of options from a supply perspective.